Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Pelvic Zen, a show designed to promote pelvic floor wellness in men and women. My name is Caitlin McCurdy Robinson, and I will be the host of the show. I am a physical therapist at Sullivan Physical Therapy in Austin, Texas. Our clinic specializes in women's and men's health conditions related to pelvic floor. Examples of pelvic floor dysfunctions include urinary and fecal incontinence, prolapse, constipation, chronic pelvic pain, sexual pain and other sexually related issues, and prenatal postpartum pain. While all of these are conditions are common, many people suffer in silence because they do not realize treatments are available or because they are embarrassed to discuss their symptoms with a healthcare professional. Whether you are experiencing these symptoms and don't know what to do next, or you are already seeking treatment for your symptoms, this show aims to provide information and resources that will be helpful to you in your recovery process. Today, I'll be sharing the show with my coworker, Christina McGee, to discuss pediatric bowel and bladder issues and ways that physical therapy can address these issues. Christina earned a Bachelor of Science in Athletic Training from the University of Iowa and Doctorate in Physical Therapy from the University of Delaware. She has been practicing in pelvic floor physical therapy since graduating. Christina has advanced training in care of pregnant patients and is the head of Sullivan Physical Therapy's Pediatric Bowel and Bladder Program. Christina has a strong commitment to providing her patients with information regarding their condition and treatment. She feels that the specialty area of women's and men's health physical therapy particularly necessitates open and understanding communication between patient and provider, and feels that her patients appreciate her sincere interest in their questions and concerns. Christina is also a member of the American Physical Therapy Association. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thank you so much, Caitlin, for having me.
Can you please start by describing some of the typical conditions that you would see a pediatric patient for related to bowel and bladder dysfunction?
Sure. So conditions that I am usually seeing a pediatric patient for are urinary or fecal incontinence. That includes nighttime incontinence. And a lot of these stem from chronic holding patterns, so refusal to go to the bathroom for significant periods of time and chronic constipation.
Okay. And are there any diagnoses that you would consider inappropriate for physical therapy treatment?
Sure. So let me first go over some of the diagnoses that are appropriate for physical therapy. The first, like I mentioned, is incontinence, and that refers to any sort of unwanted leakage of bladder or bowel material. So that can be during the day or at night. And then enuresis is the medical terminology for nighttime leakage in specific events, not this chronic ripping throughout the night that you have no control over, but specific wetting episodes through the night. Constipation we see a lot, and that means they're passing hard stool, which is also often bulky or very large in a lot of children, and that would be happening less than three times a week. It's also often very painful to pass that stool. Encopresis, the diagnosis means leakage of very watery or applesauce or pudding-like fecal material that often is actually secondary to constipation, surprisingly enough. So what happens is your bowel holds very bulky, hard stools, and if you imagine those building up almost like river rocks at the bottom of your colon, while you continue to eat day to day, but you're not passing stool, you end up with a back pressure of a lot of liquid material entering the colon. Eventually, there's enough pressure that liquid material will actually force its way past the hard stool at the end, and the child has absolutely no control, no sensation that the leakage is even going to occur. The pressure gradients within the colon actually force the liquid material out around that hard stool. So that's something we actually see quite a lot of. And then, like I mentioned before, that chronic holding pattern. So a child that is only urinating once or twice a day, is only having bowel movements once a week or even less. Or if you look in the toilet after your child has had a bowel movement and the stools are enormous, people will describe like soup can, like with stool, that really, really bulky, been sitting in the bowel for a prolonged period of time. But things that I do not treat via physical therapy because it has a neurological component is going to be conditions such as tethered cord syndrome, cerebral palsy, spinal cord injury, spina bifida, myelomeningocele. All of these diagnoses typically come along with a neurogenic bladder, which means that the central nervous system actually has poor control over the system. And so that patient is likely going to have to catheterize in order to empty the bladder, or they will have just chronic leakage that cannot be controlled via voluntary sphincters. So any child with a true diagnosed neurological bladder, neurogenic bladder, is not a, or bowel, is not appropriate for physical therapy.
Okay, very good. And with that, are there any specific age ranges that are either appropriate or not appropriate for physical therapy?
Yeah. So typically, we only see patients that are over 5 years old, and that's because in the average child, it can take up to the age of 5 to develop complete neurological control and neurological development of the bladder and bowel system. However, we sometimes will see patients that are younger if they're having a specific medical condition due to pelvic floor dysfunction, such as kidney reflux or chronic UTIs, or if they've had former bowel and bladder control and now are having regression in their bowel and bladder function. We will see children that are younger than 5 years old for that. But in general, I'd say over 5.
Okay. And what would you do to tell a parent or the child to prepare for the initial examination? Is there anything that they should know prior to coming in?
There's nothing specifically that they have to do in preparation for the first evaluation visit. Really just having kind of a general record of what's been going on bowel and bladder-wise, so that we have a general idea of how often are they having a bowel movement, what does it look like, is there pain with bowel movements consistently, how often are they urinating, how often are they having any bowel or bladder leakage. That's typically what I want them to have a decent idea of, so I can have that information on the first eval. But usually the first time we meet, I'm not doing any sort of actual exam on the child. I want to get to know them first and get to know the family, understand what's going on, how it's affecting them at school, how it's affecting them at home, their habits, things like that. And then I go over a lot with them the anatomy of the digestive system and the urinary system, and we understand that these are organs that are having this dysfunction. It's not the child being bad or trying to cause trouble, that they're having any leakage. It is a true physiological issue, and we talk about how the pelvic floor plays into that and how having better control over the pelvic floor can give us better control over bowel and bladder. We talk a lot about how bladder and bowel control are interrelated. Even though they seem like two different issues, a lot of times that chronic constipation that we talked about as being such a menace earlier will put a lot of pressure onto the bladder because that bowel has expanded so far that the impact is actually pressing against the bladder, and that can impact the child's ability to hold urine or even their sensation that there's stool in the colon or that there's urine in the bladder. So we talk over a lot of those issues. Kind of give them ideas of what physical therapy will entail in the upcoming visits, which is a lot of biofeedback where we put little stickers on their bottom. Everything goes on the outside. We never do anything internally at all with a pediatric patient. And we're actually able to watch on the computer screen how they're able to control their muscles. So when they squeeze, we can watch different graphs move up and down, or we can turn on programs where they see a dolphin jumping or a spaceship moving based on their muscle activity. And kids actually usually really like that. And then I do also on that first visit talk about diet a decent amount and just try to get an understanding of what the child is eating and how that might be affecting their bladder and bowel function.
Okay. And then after that initial assessment, how does treatment usually run?
So I will usually, and this is a generalization, but I will usually patients once a week for anywhere between 4 or 6 visits, and then we usually do an every other week follow-up for about 2 visits, and then I might see them a month out after that visit, or even maybe once a month for 2 visits out, depending on how extensive their issue is, what issues we're tackling one at a time, because I always get after bowel issues first. Then we go after bladder, and then we go after nighttime issues. You have to have daytime control before you can have nighttime control. So it might be that additional month visit out if the parents are working a lot at home with nighttime control, which is sometimes the case.
Okay, and the treatment's still usually with the biofeedback, or are you using other types of intervention?
Almost always I'm using the biofeedback. We will do some full body exercises that might impact the pelvic floor, and kids are always sent home with a home exercise program, very similar to any of our adult patients, but there's always a home program that they're working on in between our visits. The biofeedback I like because, like I said, there's a lot of buy-in with the children. I really like to watch it, and they feel like it's a computer game, and that kind of reminds them, okay, how does my muscle work? What does it feel like when I squeeze? Oh, I can see that on screen. And then what does it feel like when I relax? Okay, I can see that on the screen.
And you were talking a bit about looking at their diet. What types of recommendations are you usually making, and is it important for them to be addressing their diet?
Yes, absolutely. So if you just think logically, whatever you put into your body is going to affect what comes out of your body. So we definitely have to address diet, and that's something that I do within the scope of physical therapy practice. I am not a nutritionist, and I don't pretend to be, but there's some basic things that we can get after right away. Some recommendations that I definitely have are lots of water. I don't like that kids drink much else other than water, because there are so many things like sodas and juices and sugary drinks are going to be bladder irritants, so that actually means that be more likely they're going to have leakage, or more likely they're going to have that urgency or difficulty controlling their bladder. So primarily water, at least 50 to 75 ounces a day, and then 5 fruits and vegetables a day, same as, you know, your average pyramid recommendation. Getting rid of all those white fluffy foods, so breads and pastas and rices, making sure we're not taking in white flour that can, and tortillas that can really bulk up and stop your stool. And then some constipating foods that people don't typically shove, but can be eaten a lot by children and can be constipating, are things like peanut butter, applesauce, bananas, tapioca, which you can actually find in a lot of like fruit snacks or granola bars, and then arrowroot, which is a typical gluten-free alternative. Marshmallows and cheese, all of those are super constipating and tend to be in a lot of kids' foods. So we talk about ways we can cut down on those and increase fruits and vegetable intake and healthy grains.
And I assume based on this, especially with the diet, but how involved do the parents need to be in this process, and what are the parents' roles usually as their children are getting physical therapy?
Right. So there's always a parent in the room with us when we're doing our treatment, just so they understand exactly what's going on in this treatment, and they understand why we're doing what we're doing, and they can kind of carry that over to home. Like I mentioned, and you talked about, diet is going to be crucial, because more than likely, depending on the age of the child, the parent is deciding what goes into their diet. So they absolutely have to understand what is going to help and what is going to hinder progress. And then making sure patients take their medications. We're not prescribing medication, but certainly a lot of these patients are on a regular, their supplement or medication to regulate their bladder and bowel, and making sure that they're staying consistent with that, because if you have a few days without, you're going to see a big regression and a lot more constipation, excuse me. And then just making sure that they're staying consistent with their home program and their exercises. I try to send a lot of patients home with charts they can check off, or sticker charts that once they've done their daily routines, they can sticker or draw a smiley face or whatever they want to do. And it's really going to depend on the age of the child, how independent they are with those kind of activities. So if it's a younger child, obviously the parent is going to have to be reminding them frequency. Hey, did you do your exercises today? Did you remember to go to the bathroom? Things like that. But if it's an older child, I hope that they take more ownership of their own program.
Great. And are there any closing thoughts or anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about?
So the main thing that I really want to stress, especially to parents, is that almost never is bowel and bladder dysfunction a behavioral issue. So a lot of times parents get frustrated, obviously, because they're changing sheets throughout the night because of bladder leakage, or they're having to send their kids with extra pairs of clothes to school, or it's frustrating when you feel like their peers have developed bowel and bladder control and your child has not, but it is almost never a behavioral issue. It's not something that can be punished, especially nighttime leakage. That's the equivalent of having a nightmare. You can't punish someone for what happened when they were not conscious. But it's shown that children with bowel and bladder dysfunction have correlated higher psychological dysfunction scores. And originally it was thought, oh, if they have higher psychological dysfunction, that's what's causing, it's a behavioral issue that's causing their leakage. But really it's shown that if you take care of the bowel and bladder leakage, those psychological scores come back down to normal, which suggests that it's really sensations of lack of control of their body that can be causing some of that psychological dysfunction. And so it's extremely important that we try to get these issues addressed as early as possible so that they're not having impaired interactions with their peers at school, that they feel like they're on par with everyone else, they feel like they have control over their lives and their bodies, and we're not setting children up for dysfunction in adulthood, too, whether it be psychological or bladder and bowel dysfunction. So I think that is the main reason that this program is in existence, pediatric bladder and bowel dysfunction, and it's been very, very successful so far. And if people have any questions, I always encourage them to contact me or contact our clinic, and we can certainly let them know if they're appropriate for treatment. We're always happy to talk to doctors and let them know more about what we do and how we think we can help.
All right, so I'm going to open up the phone line. The guest call-in number is 858-777-5907, and there is also the chat open, so if anyone has any questions, please feel free to call in or send us a message that we can address on the show. All right. Well, since there are no additional, no callers for us today, would you like to close by just letting us know if there's somebody either looking outside the Austin area, if there's a way that they can search for or find a pelvic floor physical therapist that specializes in pediatric bowel and bladder issues?
There is. You can go to the American Physical Therapy Association's website and section on women's health, and click on PT Locator. That will bring you to a screen that allows you to choose practitioners in a variety of specialties of women's health, and one of those is pediatric pelvic health. So click on there, and you should be able to find someone near your area.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Christina.
For having me.